This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, an hour-length dramatization of J.P. Marquand's latest novel, Point of No Return. For more than a decade now, J.P. Marquand has been painting a literary mural of New England in such notable books as Wickford Point, The Late George Appley, H.M. Fulham, Esquire, and B.F.'s Daughter. His latest novel, Point of No Return, was one of the literary excitements of 1949, and we bring it to you today in a radio version by Milton Wayne. This version concentrates on the contemporary aspects of the book, the material which Mr. Marquand himself has subtitled, Banking is an Art. The performance fee for today's broadcast, incidentally, is being turned over by Mr. Marquand to the Children's Theater, or rather the Children's Hospital in Boston, which is now being made into a national center for children's diseases. At intermission time on NBC Theater, we will bring you a recorded commentary on the writings of J.P. Marquand by the noted author, scholar, and radio personality, John Kiernan. Here now is Point of No Return by J.P. Marquand.
The day begins at 7. Life begins. Life begins at 40, so they say. But what about 43, Mr. C? What happens to a man's life at 43? The life in question being that of myself, Charles Gray, husband, father, homeowner in Sycamore Park, Connecticut. Also one of the assistant vice presidents of the Stuyvesant Bank on Upper Fifth Avenue, New York City. I know what happens, and I don't like it a bit. I've been seeing it like a trailer for an unpleasant coming attraction. Well, nothing has changed yet, probably won't till Friday, 4 days from now. 43 years. I guessed 4 days. Everything's still the same, but now summing up different because something different in me. I'm off my heels now. All tiptoeing, uncertain as the pitch of a $10 trumpet. Charlie, my boy, let's face it square. Say it right out to ourselves. We're afraid. Suddenly, I'm afraid. Often that way before an unhappy thing. It's been a long and fairly merry flight. But now it's here. I've come to it. The point of no return. The point of no return.
Charlie.
Huh?
Wake up.
I'm awake. Nancy, what's it doing out?
Raining.
Oh, terrible morning, isn't it? I have a headache.
If you'd only remember not to drink after dinner.
Oh, I hate sitting around with a lot of people just talking after dinner.
Now, darling, who was it who wanted to go to the Clifford?
Well, she gets me down, and I can't help feeling sorry for Brad.
Everybody's always sorry for him. We should start feeling sorry for yourself.
All right.
Now, don't go to sleep again.
Hmm?
I have to go down and cope with the coffee.
All right. It's still raining?
Hard now. The windshield wipers on the car hardly ever work.
Swell. That makes it just swell.
I thought that might pick you up.
Yeah.
You'd better wear your herringbone suit. I've put your discharge button on it.
Oh, take it off, will you? I'm not running for any office.
Oh, yes, you are. Don't you keep forgetting it. You're right in there polishing apples. Hear me?
All right.
Now, don't forget. Wear the herringbone.
Mm-hmm.
And don't take that thing out of the buttonhole. No matter how well Roger Blakesley looks, he hasn't got a duck.
No, that's right. He was too bright to get one. Maybe he's just bright enough to get the vice presidency.
Oh, which reminds me, we're going to the Burtons Friday night. Don't forget to tell Mr. Burton you're looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, all right. I think that'll be D night.
What's that?
D for decision.
Darling.
What?
You know, it's nice driving you to the train again. Sort of like coming back to where we started.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's funny, but when I came down to breakfast this morning, the whole place seemed ready-made.
Ready-made?
Yes. Just as though I'd never done anything about it.
I know. I'm too efficient.
No, that isn't what I mean.
No, someday you're going to say you don't like it. I'm afraid of that. Darling, why don't you ask Tony Burton what the score is? Aren't you tired of waiting?
It'll get over. Everything does.
Well, if we just had the cards on the table, if you just said to
him... Oh, now, don't tell me what to say to him, because I'm not going to say anything.
Well, I hope Roger Blakesley likes it.
Hmm.
You know what Molly said to me yesterday? She said, Roger's so glad you're back at the bank and settled down.
Well, that's swell. I just wish Roger would get over acting as if I'd just gotten out of the service and was still adjusting. If the officers and directors want him for the job, they'll take him.
Yes, but you'll have to resign. Didn't Walter Gibbs once tell you? They don't like you well enough to move you up. It's time to get out. You'll have to get out.
Next thing, you'll be asking me to think of the children.
That's so funny.
No, not funny, no. Just contrived. Like something out of Tennyson or a Victorian novel. The little woman kissing her husband goodbye. Everything depends on this moment. So goodbye, darling. And don't come back to me without being vice president of the trust company. That's all I mean.
Don't say that.
Why not?
Don't say it. Because maybe you're right.
No, wait
a minute. Because if you say that, well, if you mean that, maybe it isn't much, but it's all we have. Maybe it isn't much, but then maybe we aren't much. And if you feel that way, there won't be anything anymore.
Now, listen, Nance. Let's not get so emotionally involved.
Involved with what?
With each other. Let's get some sense of proportion.
Oh, look, don't talk about proportion. There isn't any time. If you're not taking the 5:30, call me up. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'll make the 5:30, all right. Times.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, hello, Charlie.
Hello, Roger. Lousy morning.
The radio says it'll clear up by noon. Hope so. Listen, Charlie, will you have any time in your hands today?
Not much, Roger. How about lunch?
Oh, I can't make it. I've a date with Tony at the university club. After that, Mates is coming in. But we've got to check up on that Catlin thing before we meet with the attorney.
Well, we can go over it on the train if you want to. I have the papers here.
Boy, I simply can't. Tony wants me. He's saving me a seat.
There's a lot more to banking than you think, isn't there? It's an art, isn't it?
Charles, you're always so subtle in the morning. Well, I'll see you in the studio.
Right. Don't mix your colors wrong, Roger. Roger doesn't answer. He's already bounding up the steps of the third coach. He's always been quick on his feet. And this sort of thing has been going on long enough for me to understand all the shades of meaning. I'd give odds that Tony Burton, coming down from Stanford, hadn't asked Roger to sit with him. Find a seat by a window. Open the Times to the financial page. In this corner, weighing 172, wearing rimless glasses and a blue Brooks Brothers pinstripe number, and carrying a degree from the Harvard Graduate School of Business Administration, Roger Blakesley. My fellow assistant vice president in the trust department. My mortal competition. We both worked almost everywhere in the bank. Very bright boys, both of us. But I just shade Roger. And Tony Burton undoubtedly knows it. I guess. I hope. Tony Burton. It was a great day for the Charles Grays back there before Pearl Harbor when he made the great suggestion.
Look here, fella. Why not cut out this sir business? Why not just call me Tony?
Great joy and relief. Mostly relief. And after only 11 years in the bank, too. I could hardly wait to tell Nancy.
Darling, we ought to have a drink of something, shouldn't we? I knew it would happen sometime. I'm pretty proud of you, Charlie.
A week later, we found out that Mr. Burton had also asked Roger Blakesley to call him Tony. And we never did find out which one of us he'd asked first.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
Good morning, Miss Marvel. What's on the agenda?
Nothing on your calendar before the meeting, but Mrs. Whitaker has just called you.
All right. Get her for me in 5 minutes.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Tony.
I didn't see you on the train.
No, I didn't see you either. Mrs. Whitaker is after me.
Well, as long as she's after you and not me. We'll see you at dinner Friday, won't we?
You can count on it. Absolutely.
Yes, I suppose we can, Charlie. You boys are getting together at 11, aren't you?
Yes.
I'll be there.
Did he just weigh every word the way I did? Why should he have? But maybe it was there between the lines and I muffed it. No. Just a bland, routine conversation. Friendly, all right, and nothing more. What else could it be with Roger's desk right beside mine? Forget it.
Mrs. Whitaker's on the telephone now.
Oh. Good morning, Mrs. Whitaker. This is Mr. Gray.
Oh, Mr. Gray, so nice to hear your voice. Stuart and I are so dreadfully worried, Mr.
Why,
Gray.
I'm sorry. What have you to be worried about?
Well, we had to sell something, Mr. Gray, and right away. We literally haven't got a cent of money. We simply don't know what to sell. Everything shows a profit.
Oh, well, most of our friends like it better that way. Let me see. You have a number of short-term governments.
Oh, Mr. Whitaker doesn't want to sell those. He says we must back up the government no matter what it does. I believe that, don't you?
Well, I wouldn't say it would be disloyal to sell. Short-term governments are about the same as cash.
Suppose we try to think of something else.
Yes. I'd better get a picture of the whole situation. If you're not well enough to come in yourself, I could send Mr. Joyce over to see you.
I don't think Mr. Joyce has the experience, do you? And Mr. Thingamajig, what's his name? The one Mr. Burton turned me over to last time when you were out, he was indefinite, too. And besides, I thought he was a little chief. That round-faced pussycat man with the glasses.
You don't mean Mr. Blakesley, do you?
That's Mr. Blakesley.
Oh, I know him pretty well. I wouldn't say he was a pussycat.
It's a compliment to you, Mr. Gray, that you and I both want you to help us. And we simply have to find $100,000 somewhere.
All right. I'll see you at 5, Mrs. Whitaker.
Goodbye, Mr. Gray.
Mr. Gray, here's a gentleman to see you.
Oh. Good morning.
Well, if it isn't Charlie Gray. Charlie, don't you remember me at all? Come on, I could tell you anywhere. The child is father to the man.
Did I know you when I was a child?
No, you didn't. You knew me when I was 32 and you were 22. Oh, listen, Charlie. I'm Malcolm Bryant.
Malcolm? Well, I'll be a son of a gun.
You're looking fine.
Here, sit down.
Thank you. I just dropped in to cash a government check and the cashier asked if anybody could identify me. I looked around. There you were.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me have it, Alan. Joe?
Yes, sir?
Would you get this cash, please?
Right away, sir.
Well. How's Clyde?
I don't know, Malcolm.
Oh, is your family still living there?
Well, my father's dead, and my mother is living with Dorothea in Kansas City.
Oh, so Dorothea's married?
Yes. Mm-hmm. She married a man named Elbridge Stern, metallurgist, and he's in Kansas City now.
Oh, yes, Elbridge, yes. What about the old house?
Oh, I guess it's still there. We sold it. I haven't been there for a very long time.
Massachusetts ghost town. A vital sort of ghost town. That's the way I described it in the introduction.
Introduction?
Haven't you seen my book on Clyde?
No.
It's the best thing the Foundation ever got out. I'll give you one.
Why, thank you, Malcolm. What's it called?
Yankee Persepolis. That's what I call Clyde.
Why Persepolis?
Well, that's where the Persians worship memories. I stopped off there in 1935 on my way to India. I was studying some dog worshippers there.
Oh, no.
Here's your cash, Mr. Gray.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Yes, Miss Marvel?
It's 11 o'clock, Mr. Gray.
Thank you. Well, here's your wampum, Malcolm. You better copy it.
No, it's only paper and has less intrinsic value than shell money. It's symbolism. Where are you going?
Have to go to a meeting.
How about lunch? Come on over to the Harvard Club.
Miss Marvel, have I a luncheon engagement?
Why, no. Not today, Mr. Gray.
See you there, then, at 12:30. Goodbye, Charlie.
Ready to go down for the meeting, Charlie?
Yes, just let me get these papers away, Roger.
Now, on this matter of the Eastern loan, gentlemen, are there further questions?
Why didn't he go to his own bank? Not that it's any of my business.
May I say something on that, Tony?
Go right ahead, Roger.
It was because I met him first, Charles, and I'm selling him on the personal service of a small bank. I met him playing golf. I've seen quite a good deal of Godfrey Easton. He's a friend of Sam Summerby. You know him, Tony. Sam Summerby from Baltimore.
You've made a good point there, Roger. A very good point, old boy. Nobody's missed it that he's promoted a nice piece of business with a Stuyvesant, which is more than I've done lately. And he did it because he gets around and sweetens contacts and plays golf with people like Samuel Summerby. And nobody here has missed that Roger is good as said that it's too bad Charlie plays such a rotten game of golf. They're waiting. I've got to say something. Are you on a first-name basis with him, Roger?
Well, of course I am. I've known Godfrey Easton for a year. Everybody at the club knows Godfrey.
Well, I rather liked him myself. He's breezy, but he has an agreeable personality. But Charles has put the finger on it. Why should he come around to us?
Because he liked us, Tony. He told me he liked you very much personally.
And why shouldn't he? I'd love Tony myself if he'd lend me $300,000. That's the way it is, love and money.
You're so right, Charlie.
As a matter of fact, gentlemen, Easton's putting up enough collateral. There's only one security I question. Now, here's an unlisted company from a place called Clyde, Massachusetts. The Nickerson Cordage Company. Wait a minute. Clyde, let's see. Charles, don't you come from a place called Clyde?
Yes, sir, I was born there. I haven't been there in quite a while.
What about the Nickerson Cordage Company?
Well, they make rope and twine and fishnets.
Well, if Godfrey Easton has money in it, it must be good.
Hmm. Well, gentlemen, we'll leave this for now. It's getting on toward lunchtime.
What am I doing here in this conference room? How did I get here? I guess we're all here because banking is dignified and fashionable. There isn't much else but business when you finish college. 12:10. Out of here soon. That's a break. Roger is getting a little difficult. Both of us assistant VPs and showing off before the bank officials like college boys bucking for manager of some team. Doing it in a nice way, of course. And both of us justified. It's warfare every minute. Maybe I'd better join that bunch around Tony Burton. Show some eagerness and zeal. Not too much, just the right touch of...
You can't always tell beforehand. It may sound a little strange, but when I was a sophomore at Yale, I studied Greek. And, gentlemen, I can tell you that Greek verbs have taught me more about corporate figures than anything else I ever learned at Yale.
Well, it's pretty clear, as you've often said, Tony. Everything fits into banking somewhere.
Exactly, Charles. Everything. Banking deals with all the most fundamental hopes and aspirations of human beings. In fact, I don't like... Honestly, I don't. I don't like to think of banking as a business or even as a profession, but as an art. The last of the arts, perhaps, but the oldest of the professions. Let's get some lunch, gentlemen.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Charlie. Let's go in the dining room and have some lunch. Oh, I see you've been looking over my opus.
I was just glancing through it while you were on the phone.
Huh?
It's funny, I never heard of it before.
Oh, well, it's a professional sort of book. Everybody has to publish something.
It has a lot of facts, but it doesn't sound much like Clyde.
Oh, well, good Lord. It isn't meant to be Clyde. It's only meant to represent a characteristic social unit. Oh, here. Let's not wait on ourselves. Let's get a table at the end.
Uh-huh. All right, Malcolm. You're paying for it. I can't. I'm a likable Dartmouth boy.
So you read that piece, did you?
I just glanced at it. There wasn't much time.
Well, Charlie, what'll you have? Order anything you like.
Yeah. Well, the regular lunch is fine, thanks. I really haven't much time.
Charlie, that book, I thought everything was pretty well scrambled in it, but you picked yourself out, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Yes. The Smith family.
Mm. I'm afraid it made you sore. Well, get it out of your head that it's personal.
I wouldn't say I was sore. But, of course, it's personal. And I can't say I like the idea.
No? What idea?
Oh, well, you know... Well, you might have put our family in the middle upper classification instead of the lower upper. Did you ever get married? Hmm? You were always talking about marriage.
No, never mind it. Women always forget me when I go away.
Oh?
What happened about you and Jessica?
Never mind it now.
No? All right. What's happened to you since? I mean, since I used to know you. What have you been doing, Charlie?
Oh, well, let's see. Back in 30, I got a job in the statistical department of the Stuyvesant. Did it well enough so that I held it all through the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I married a girl who worked downtown in the law office. We had two children. We built a house in Connecticut that I'm still paying for. Right now, there's the vice presidential vacancy at the bank. It rests between me and another man. That's about all I've been doing.
Well, of course, you haven't filled in many details. For instance, you love your wife?
Oh, I thought you'd ask that. The answer is yes, I love my wife. I love my home and my children.
I thought you would. You're an essentially monogamous type.
Mm.
Oh, so you've been to the war.
Hmm?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I've forgotten the button.
Yeah, I was in, too. OSS.
I was with the 8th Air Force. But only good for staff work.
Now you're back, don't you ever get to wondering, Charlie, what everything's about, whether everything is worthwhile?
That's a little tough to answer, that one. I'm just Tom Smith from Dartmouth, trying to get along. Someday, you ought to take a trip to the USA and do a study on the race of bankers.
That's not a bad idea at all. What are they like?
Well, I can only speak about the employees of the Stuyvesant. We're all specialists in understanding rich clients. We know all the pains and drawbacks of being rich, although we're not rich men ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear some more.
All right. Find yourself spending the working day discussing investments of hundreds of thousands of dollars, only to go home yourself and worry because the butcher bill is up $20 over the last one, and whether you can afford to have your kids' teeth straightened. In time, this gives you a split personality. In time, you can't ever change from being a banker. Stuyvesant's president likes to talk about the banker's responsibility to society. Well, personally, I've never felt like a social worker, but I do feel that responsibility. Well, it's 2:15. I've got to go now.
No. Oh, no, not yet. We've only just begun to talk, Johnny.
Wish you hadn't made me talk about myself all the time.
Charlie, you've got a lot of guts.
How do you mean guts?
Mm-hmm. Saying what you do, doing what you do. It takes guts to be your type these days. Goodbye. Good luck, Charlie.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a radio version of Point of No Return by J.P. Marquand. If you're interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, John Kieran.
It's rather curious that John Marquand's characters seem to have lost themselves just where the author has found himself. John Marquand wrote all over the field, so to speak, for some years, and then he hit upon a winning character, financially, in his celestial detective, Mr. Moto. But money alone wasn't good enough for John Marquand, just as it is never good enough for the characters he developed when he said goodbye to Mr. Moto and began his series of New England novels. His Wickford Point, The Late George Apley, B.F.'s Daughter, and Point of No Return are something like a New England division of Balzac's Comédie Humaine. One reason for the excellence of this gallery of New England portraits is that John Marquand was writing out of personal experience and family background. He lived that life. He knows those persons and their problems. He's satirical about their tribal ways, but it's often a sympathetic satire. The title of this book, Point of No Return, is the theme of the story. It's the tale of a nice young man of energy and intelligence who wanted to free himself from all the bonds of family background that seemed to map out his whole life along a narrow path. He planned to break loose, but New England customs and family ties hindered him at every turn. And as he followed the path mapped out for him, he finally discovered that he had passed the point of no return. He couldn't turn back. In fact, he couldn't even turn aside. He had to go on. Except for the flashback technique that gives the early biography of the principal figure, the whole action in Point of No Return takes place in a mere matter of weeks, during which nothing much happens of any great moment to the world at large. There is nothing earth-shaking in this book. The characters are quiet, almost noiseless persons. To be loud or dramatic is to be vulgar in the circle in which they move. And at the end, when Charlie Gray and his family can look forward to an expanding life of ease and prestige, is Charlie Gray a success? Is he a failure? He doesn't know. He does know that he was never master of his fate or captain of his soul. He was hemmed in by tradition. He was hampered by his family. He was held back by his own sense of decency. He wore a tight-fitting code of morals. It's a good story, and it shows how many of us, like Charlie Gray, are never the bold, energetic, defiant souls we would like to be, but men and women whose lives are, to a great degree, determined by the invisible bonds of our family background and the inescapable barriers of our environment.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran. Our radio version of Point of No Return will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification. Anything new, Miss Marvel?
Nothing new, Mr. Gray. I called up Mrs. Gray and told her you couldn't catch the 5:30. She said to remember that you're going to the country club tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, call her again. Tell her I'll meet her there. I have that 5 o'clock date with Mrs. Whittaker.
Mr. Seelig is coming in at 2:45, the one who wants to open an account. I thought she'd like to see the credit department memorandum.
Seelig?
The matter that Mr. Burton asked you yesterday to handle.
Oh, yes.
He's not back from lunch.
Which makes it natural to Mr. Seelig, we hope, that I do the dusty work.
Here's a memorandum.
Thank you. Bert J. Seelig, part owner of the Teddy Club, La Casita Nightclub, Real Estate Palm Springs, Real Estate Miami. Stockholder. Indicted for income tax fraud, but indictment quashed. What's the use of going on? It's all decided. Could have been handled by letter, but Tony Burton disapproves of anything so permanent. Tony Burton approves, and Tony Burton disapproves. A jaunty, white-haired god at a rolled-top desk. Indefinite about yes or no. Very positive about maybe.
Excuse me, Mr. Gray.
All right, Joe.
And Mr. Seelig, this is I, Mr. Gray. He'll take care of you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy to meet you, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Gray.
Mr. Burton asked me to see you. I have all the details. Won't you sit down, Mr. Seelig?
Yes, thank you. Nice little place you have here. Very nice.
Just a small bank.
That's what draws me to it, Mr. Gray. I know some lovely people banking here, some of my best friends. Oh, well, I suppose you've looked me over. I hope I passed through the lineup by now. I'm used to being looked over in my position.
Anyone in business gets looked over.
That's right. Well, what's the story? Do you people want my account or don't you?
Our officers have been over the question very carefully.
We would value your account in a great many ways, Mr. Selig. But we really feel that you'll be better off with another bank.
There's nothing personal intended.
We often find the needs of some depositors are better filled by other banks.
I'm not used to being given a runaround. Why didn't they say that the first time I came in?
Well, I'm sorry you put it that way. Mr. Burton was very impressed by your references.
So you're fronting for the crowd, are you? Tell me, how much they pay you? $10,000 a year? Guys like you fascinate me. Look, how would you like $25,000 a year?
What for?
For what you're doing here. Fronting for the crowd.
Thanks. I'm afraid I couldn't use it. But I appreciate your asking.
Yeah. You guys fascinate me. Money everywhere. You don't want money.
Well, maybe we get too used to it. Maybe we get tired of seeing so much of it around.
Yeah, that's just what fascinates me. All of it around, you don't take it.
Well,
no hard tea.
No, not at all. We're very sorry, Mr. Seeley.
Yeah. Takes poise. I wouldn't have the poise.
I wouldn't call it poise. I'd call it temperament and timidity. Goodbye. We're sorry, Mr. Seeley.
How was he, Charlie?
Oh, a perfect gentleman, Roger. Asking if I was fronting for the crowd.
Yeah, Charlie, has Seelig called?
Yes, Tony, he's just left.
Well, I'm glad I missed him. How'd he take it?
His feelings were hurt, but then mine would have been too.
There aren't any complications, then?
No, Tony, I don't think so.
This sort of thing always worries me.
Oh, Mr. Burton.
Yes?
Have you got time to see me for a minute?
Yes, if it's only for a minute, Roger.
Easy now. Stop sweating inside. Keep yourself blank and busy. Why should Roger ask to see him now? Why didn't he just go over to the desk without any appointment? We always do. Maybe Roger's getting tired of waiting. He'll step right over and ask right out, how about the vice presidency? All right. So he does it. What's the point of getting my stomach all knotted and hanging by my fingernails? What use is it? Nothing. There's no way to stop it. Might be different if Tony knew somebody else wanted me for the same salary. Instead, he knows that times are tight and uncertain. And Tony is stalling. Tony's mulling and weighing and balancing. Vacillating.
Speak to him, Charlie. Ask Tony the score.
Poor Nancy. That would tear it, but good. And still, it's something to think about. To walk right over and be upright, downright, and straightforward. But listen, Tony, let's face facts. Everybody here in the bank knows you're considering proposing either Roger Blakesley or me for this vice presidency. I've been making bets on it in the washroom. It isn't dignified. Now, you know everything about me, Tony. I've been around here long enough. This thing has been going on for months, and I'm tired of staying awake at night. And Nancy's getting tired, too. How about it, Tony? Yes?
Mr. Gray, Mr. Burton wants to know if you can see him for a moment.
Yes, I'll be right over.
Sit down, Charlie. Have a cigarette and relax.
What's on your mind, Tony?
How did you represent things to Seeley?
I told him he'd be happier elsewhere.
Why didn't you tell him we'd have room for him in the quite near future?
Because he wouldn't have believed it.
Well, he has a lot of good connections. Now, that's the trouble with life these days. There's no pattern. You don't know where you're at anymore. Now, my girls keep going to La Casita, but we can't handle Seelig's account. Well, let's forget it, Charlie. There's one other thing.
Yes, sir?
About the loan.
Which loan, sir?
The one we were discussing this morning, that Cordage Company. You said you were born up there. What's the name of the place?
You mean Clyde.
Yes, that's it, Clyde. Now, somebody ought to see that company, and it just occurred to me, since you lived up there and know the background, you'd better go up for a day or two and look things over, just quietly. I envy you getting away for a while. You're looking a little tired, Charles.
Do you mind if I ask you a question, Tony?
Why, no. Of course not, Charles.
Did you think up this idea yourself?
Why, No, now that you mention it, it wasn't entirely my idea. I suppose Roger ought to go. It's his responsibility. But he doesn't know Clyde. Let's see. You'll be back by Friday, won't you? Remember, you're coming to dinner on Friday.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Well, relax and have a good time, Charlie.
That's the second time you've told me to relax.
Well, then do it. I'll see you Friday. Just you and Nancy are coming. You and I'll have a good long talk about the whole situation here on Friday.
Hello, Cyril. Mind if I cut in?
Charlie.
I'll get Nancy off your hands.
Give him the devil for being late, Nancy. Have fun.
Oh, thank heavens you've come. I've been dancing with him for ages. Is there any news?
No, nothing much. I can't talk about it here, Nancy.
What have you been doing all day?
Stuck in the Whitakers' apartment.
Oh, the Whitakers. Did anything else happen? Did you say anything to Tony Burton?
No. No, not exactly.
How do you mean, not exactly?
Just that, not exactly.
Roger Blakesley's here tonight. You seen him?
Not yet. I've seen him at the bank all day.
He looks exuberant.
Oh, does he?
You look a little tired, darling.
Well, I am tired.
Did the children get you your supper?
Oh, yes, yes. Thanks for leaving the car.
Charlie.
Hmm?
Before we go, be sure to dance with Molly Blakesley.
Aye, aye, sir. To answer you truthfully, Molly, no, I don't know what Roger was saying the other night.
Roger was saying how fond everyone is of you at the bank. And he was saying how wonderful it was that we were all such good friends. And he hoped we always would stay friends, no matter what happens at the bank. You know what I mean. So embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it needn't be embarrassing, Molly. Roger and I are grown up.
You know, I think the war did you a lot of good, Charlie. Roger thinks so, too. I think it was pretty splendid of you, with a wife and two children, to give up everything and go to war. Roger thinks so, too.
Just a sort of compulsion. Wasn't wise. I wasn't much use when I got there.
May I cut in?
Oh. See you later, Charlie.
Thank you, Molly.
Perhaps we can do something Sunday. Roger would love it if we could.
Move over, Charlie. I'll drive.
All right. Nancy, did you have a good time?
Yes, in a sort of long-term way.
What do you mean, long-term way?
Oh, you know. It's what I've told you before. I like feeling we belong somewhere. It's what I've always wanted.
Well, so do I. So does everyone.
Oh, well, it isn't the same for a man. He always belongs much more than a woman. Up to a certain point. Woman just has to tag along. Oh, it's nice. When she likes tagging.
Hmm. What did you do all day?
You always ask that. You don't have to.
No, I know that, but I just want to know.
I've had a good day. You wouldn't understand why. It's partly being a woman. I took the car, and I got the wipers fixed, and then I went to the A&P and bought some corned beef, and then I left Bill's shoes at the shoemaker's. And then I returned your book to the lending library, and then I bought some soap. Still keep buying soap whenever I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back and did the breakfast dishes, and the men came to wax the living room floor. And then I went upstairs, and I made the beds, and I counted the laundry. And then I went over and had lunch with Polly Martin, helped her run up some new curtains because she couldn't lend me her sewing machine. And then I came back and I worked on the bills.
How were they?
Terrible. Then there was supper and the Martins called and we all went over to the club. That's all. But it was a very nice day.
I'm glad you liked it. But I don't see why.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I'm married to a very nice man. The only possible reason I can think of. Now, my beamish boy, you can give me a kiss. Charlie, it's a lovely house.
Yeah, it's a swell house.
Come in and see what a nice job they did waxing the living room floor.
Yep.
We ought to use this room more, shouldn't we? I wonder why we don't.
Well, that's easy. Because we're afraid of it.
Well, let's not be afraid of it. Charlie, take off your coat. Put down the sofa. I'll get rid of my slippers. There. Now, don't you say we're afraid of this room. I don't like it.
Why not?
Because I don't like being afraid. I don't mean that I'm afraid of anything. I only mean I don't like the idea. Oh, you know what I mean.
Nance, we didn't used to be afraid.
Oh. Are you afraid, too? You might have told me.
It's all relative.
What's relative?
The more you get, the more afraid you get. That's all I mean. Maybe fear is what makes the world go round.
Not love?
Hmm.
I used to hear that it was love.
Everyone's afraid of something. Afraid of living, afraid of dying. Maybe that's better than being afraid of losing money, as the boys are afraid of downtown. Do you know what I wish? I wish we weren't always being pushed around. I would like, for once in my life, to be able to tell someone where to go.
Darling, you know, basically, you have the most expensive taste.
Mm.
You better just tell me where to go. Better go at that.
But it isn't the same thing, is it?
No, maybe not. But I'm awfully glad we're afraid of the same thing. It's healthy to have things in common. I'm awfully glad we're in the same boat, darling.
That's what Roger said tonight. Oh, wait. There's something else I've got to tell you. I'm taking the plane to Boston first thing in the morning. I'm going up to Clyde for a day or two on business for the bank.
How did Clyde get into it?
Why do you always get edgy whenever I mention Clyde?
You know very well why. Clyde makes you difficult. It's a queer place full of ingrown people. You say so yourself.
I can't help it if I was brought up there. I didn't ask to go up there now.
Roger will make time at the bank while you're away.
I don't think it'll make much difference. I think Tony Burton has about made up his mind which of us he wants.
Well, then, for heaven's sake, why doesn't he tell you instead of letting us...
Because perhaps he doesn't like to do it. Tony's quite a nice guy, as far as anyone like him can be nice. I think we'll get the news Friday when we go there to dinner. He almost said so. Besides, maybe it's just as well for me to be away. Tony knows Roger worked it. At least I think he knows. Maybe Roger will try a little too much. Tony's rather bright sometimes.
Picks out that darn fool. He isn't too bright.
I only said he's pretty bright sometimes.
If you'd only get mad.
You were just saying it's a luxury. There's no use getting mad at a system. We're part of a system where there's always someone waiting to kick you in the teeth in a nice way.
What do you do if he takes Roger?
Oh, Nance, let's not think about it now.
Why not? Let's dig in. Has a nice, ironic flavor. After years of proud work, you become specialized. You become used to the ways of one organization. You become too old to start again in a new one. You've seen plenty of men your age looking for a job. There. I haven't solved anything, but at least I've said it.
Sure, why not?
Oh, well, guess we'd better go to bed.
You go ahead. I'll be up in a little while. Good night, Nance. Oh, no. Don't, Nance. The show isn't over.
Sorry, darling. I'm all right now. You always hate having me cry, don't you?
Yes.
Are you sorry you married me?
Of course not.
Are you sorry we had the children?
No, of course I'm not.
They were my idea more than yours. Are you sorry we built the house?
Now listen, Nancy. It happened. Like the children. Now go on up.
Well, what are you going to do? Just sit here and worry? Because if you are, well, we might as well do it together.
I'm going to read. I'm pretty well worried out tonight. Good night, Nancy. I'll be in the library.
Don't.
Now go on up.
What are you going to do? Just sit here and worry? Because if you are, well, we might as well do it together.
I'm going to read. I'm pretty well worried out tonight. Good night, Nancy. I'll be in the library.
Don't be long. I won't be able to sleep till you come up.
Let's see. Where did I put that book? Yankee Persepolis. A social study by Malcolm Bryant. Final and considered summation of a study made some years ago of a typical New England town. Its culture and its social implications. Typical of a lower upper family are the Henry Smiths, father, mother, son, and daughter. Like other lower upper families, they dwell on a side street yet are received on Mason Street. Mr. Smith with investment interests in Boston. Mr. Smith. Alias John Gray, father of Tom Smith, alias me. Father. The big-time stock market operator at the end. On his way to a million and finally quitting. But that was October 29. He was just a week too late in getting out. And I found him, asleep forever. With a Bible and a bottle of sleeping pills in a chair by his bed. Father I loved. Father I never wanted to be like. And yet I am.
You can't beat the system, Charlie.
What system, Father?
The one under which we live. There's always a bundle of hay out ahead for any ass who wants to get on. And they make it look like a very pleasant bundle.
Well, who are they?
That's an intelligent question, even for a recent Dartmouth graduate. They are the people who run the system. They tell you there's plenty of hay for anyone who can get it. But the main thing is, Charlie, they don't really want you to get it. Now, if I were you, I wouldn't try too hard for the hay. You might be disappointed, Charlie.
You were right, old man. I didn't have what it took to beat the system that said there's a Grand Canyon between Spruce Street and Johnson Street. We should have remembered we were Spruce Streeters. And I should have remembered Jessica Lovell and her father were Johnson Streeters. Why do I think of it now? Why can I still be hurt by Jessica's father?
I've thought this over carefully, Charles. I've been over it thoroughly with Jessica. We've been most unhappy. It's an impossible situation, Charles. We must end it. It can't go on.
Here I am in Clyde again, walking the streets in the rain, reviving old ghosts and enjoying their presence.
You've got to beat the system, Charlie.
I never did beat the system called Johnson Street. Never did catch up with the happiness called Jessica Lovell. The old small town story. Likeable lad trying to climb higher, being smacked down nicely. I got up off the canvas, hurt and ambitious, and left Clyde to beat the system.
It was all very good for you. It's made you into a very nice guy. Maybe it's made you too nice.
Now I'm back here in Clyde, 17 years later, still trying to move from lower upper. But now there's no stopping, no turning back. I'm the airplane pilot on a long flight. Steadily approaching the point where it takes more gas to get back than to go on to my destination. Distant as it is, it's stormy. I've passed my point of no return.
Tell me about it, Charlie. What was it like being back in Clyde? Was it good?
It was... That was quite an experience. Jackie Mason's got everything now.
Who?
Jackie Mason. I told you about him. He used to live next door to us.
Oh, yes, of course. What about him?
Well, he's the director of the Dock Street Savings Bank, a trustee of the library, he's in the Tuesday Club, he's going to marry Jessica Lovell.
Well, you could have done all that, too.
I'm glad I didn't. But at the same time, he hasn't got anything. That's what I'm trying to say.
Who hasn't got anything?
Jackie Mason.
Oh, to the devil with Jackie Mason.
All right.
I'm sorry, Charlie. I just can't concentrate. Let's both stop trying to talk as though we weren't thinking about the same thing.
Yes, I know.
Charlie, What's the matter?
Oh, Lord. I wish everything weren't so contrived.
Contrived? What do you mean, contrived?
Oh, just that. The bank president and the big job and what will happen to Junior and whether a boiled shirt will help. The values of it are childish. It hasn't any values at all. Nancy, don't be so tense. This isn't as important as all that. I've done everything I can. Let's change the subject.
You're acting licked already. I hate it when you act that way.
All right, maybe I am licked. Maybe I don't give a rap. Roger Blakeslee is pretty fast on his feet, faster than I am.
Charlie, well, what are you going to do? Haven't you even thought what you're going to do if Roger...
I'm sick of thinking.
Oh, Nancy. It isn't fair. It isn't fair.
Well, never mind it, Nancy. It doesn't matter if we're late.
I'm all right now. Better be on time at the Burtons. Don't look at me, Charlie. Don't say anything. And darn everybody.
Tony, I don't know what you're talking about.
Althea, all I'm saying to you and Nancy and Charlie is that I wish we might all be friends.
Well, of course, we'll always be friends, Tony.
Well, I really hope we can be, in spite of anything that may happen in the future. And now, if you girls will excuse us, I'm going to take Charlie into the library. Charlie and I want to have a little talk, but we'll be back as soon as we can.
Now, don't stay too long, and don't get too interested.
Come along, Charlie.
Can't we be friends? The needle is all the way in now. This is the bad news. It's all ending now in this little walk across the hall. I can sell the house. Real estate is still high. I'll never again be where I am. Oh, I'll have some commercial value as an educated wheel horse if I'm nice and know my place. But I'll never have to try so hard again. It's over. Thank God. It's over.
This friendship in business, it's always bothered me. They shouldn't be mixed together.
They don't mix together. Don't try to make them, Tony.
And yet they must mix. None of us can help it, Charlie. If you see somebody every day, you get interested in him. Now, take Blakeslee. What do you think of him, Charlie?
What do you want me to think?
Well, it isn't what I want. You and I are alone here. Well, I want your opinion. Do you like him or don't you?
All right. As long as it doesn't matter anymore, Tony. He's conscientious, energetic, and well-trained, but I don't like him much. Why should I?
I rather like him. He's been on my conscience lately. He's so very anxious, so very much on his toes. He's always in there, trying.
Well, what else do you expect, Tony? I've been trying pretty hard myself.
Yes, but not in the same way, Charlie. You're subtler. You've developed. You've matured.
Thank you. But I wouldn't say I've been very subtle.
Well, of course, I'm out of touch with things, being where I am, but... It seems to me Roger's got some idea we're considering him for the vice presidency. Do you know anything about this?
Oh, good Lord. Oh, good Lord. What did you think Roger was considering, Tony?
Well, I didn't give it much thought until about 10 days ago. When anyone gets ideas like that, it's a problem what to do with him later. He was useful while you were away, but he's not the right material. Why, it never occurred to me you'd have any doubts about it. Your name's coming up before the directors on Monday. Now, what do you think we'd better do about Blakeslee?
You'd better tell him something, Tony, instead of teasing him to death.
Oh, I'm sorry about the whole thing. Perhaps he'd better resign. That was all I meant in the dining room. Now that we'll be working together more closely, Charlie, I hope that we'll always be friends. We'd better join the girls.
I don't suppose this comes as any great surprise, Nancy.
No, I can't say I'm surprised. But it's nice to know definitely, Tony.
As long as we're all in the family. I was just telling Charlie that I've been worried about Roger Blakesley.
Do you suppose he really may have thought he was being considered?
Now that you mention it, I think perhaps he did. A little.
Here it is, Charlie. You're a vice president now. It's what you dreamed of long ago, and yet it's a strangely hollow climax. I suppose it was written in the stars, and I couldn't have changed a line of it, being what I am. At least Nancy will be pleased. We'll sell the house at Sycamore Park, get a larger place, turn in the Buick for a new one. The children will get their sailboat. No, it may not be what you dreamed of, Charlie, back in the Clyde of your father and Jessica Lovell. But it has its compensations.
Charlie.
I'm sorry. What were you saying, Tony?
I said I don't think I've ever seen you smoke a cigar before.
Oh, I don't often, but I rather feel like it tonight.
You have been listening to Point of No Return, an NBC Theater production of the J.P. Marquand novel. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater, in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; Washington State College, Pullman, Washington; the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; or Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. You also have a chance to win a set of the famous Encyclopedia Britannica. Several of the universities and colleges offering these courses are giving the encyclopedia as prizes to the students doing the best work. Enroll in a supervised course, and you may be one of the fortunate ones to win the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, be with us again at the NBC Theater for a production of William Faulkner's tragic novel, The Wild Palms, and the following week for a first radio production of Thomas Wolfe's You Can't Go Home Again. Point of No Return was adapted for the NBC Theater by Milton Wayne. Larry Dobkin was Charles, Lynn Whitney, Nancy. Frank Gerstle was Roger, Ted Von Eltz, Burton, John Daner, Bryant, Tony Barrett was Selig, William Lally, Cyril, Marion Wilkins, Molly, Stephen Chase, Father, Margaret Brayton, Mrs. Burton. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentator was John Kieran, whose commentary was recorded. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. What's on NBC tonight? Well, you'll hear Phil Harris and Alice Faye in another red-tickling 30 minutes of family comedy. And then you'll want to stay tuned to hear The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Howard Duff. Yes, for the best in mystery and for the best in comedy, listen today to NBC for The Harris and Faye Show and The Adventures of Sam Spade. Your tune for the stars on NBC.